welcome to Prophecy Girls, a Buffy rewatch podcast.
I'm Kara Babcock, pronouns she, her.
And I'm Stephanie Chow, pronouns she, her.
Join us each week as we break down every episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
This is a spoiler-free podcast.
Whether you're watching for the first time
or longtime fans like us,
we'll be analyzing every episode, character, and storyline like it's our first time, too.
During this rewatch, we'll reminisce about our memories of Buffy,
discuss the show's cultural impact,
and provide honest commentary from a 21st century lens.
Thanks for listening.
Now, on to the episode.
Bonus episode.
Welcome to our bonus episode of Vampire Diaries. Did I just start us off?
Yes, you did. I tricked you.
Oh my god, I've been had.
Well, I guess I was going to say it's been a while since we've recorded a bonus episode. That's not true. We did the fandom on trial. When was that? January? December? Sometime.
Yeah, what is time? I think it was early January, yeah.
We watched the first two episodes of The Vampire Diaries while I was on my winter break at the end of 2023. Mm-hmm. But then, of course, life happens. And it's only now, here in March, that we're sitting down to record about this TV show. I have never seen The Vampire Diaries. I was vaguely aware of it when it was running on the CW. What about you, Steph?
Yeah, I watched, I think, up until season four. Not live. I was streaming it in like my mid-20s. Maybe in an attempt to catch up to like the when it stopped airing. When did it end, the show? Anyway, we'll get to it. I watched the first couple of seasons and then I drifted off. And I, now that I have rewatched the first two episodes with you, Kara, and then we both went and did some interesting research on our own about the rest of the series, I understand why I trailed off, and we can get to that.
Yeah, so I'll start off with a couple of disclaimers. One, obviously not spoiler-free. If you haven't seen The Vampire Diaries, there will be spoilers ahead for the series. Two, we're probably going to make a lot of fun of this show and criticize it, and I'm okay with that. If this is one of your favorite shows, you know, we're not here to yuck your yum. We're not here to say this is a terrible show and you shouldn't enjoy it. Obviously, you're allowed to, and I'm going to encourage people to enjoy terrible shows. But, you know, I'm also not here to bury this show. Like, unlike our recaps of Buffy, where both Steph and I have watched Buffy many times, we clearly love Buffy, we are fans, and we're diving into deep critical analysis of the show. We are not doing that in this episode. This is similar to our Twilight episodes, except Steph has watched Twilight less. More than Vampire Diaries.
Yes.
But we're just here to have a good time. So if that's what you want, then stay tuned. And if not, I'm sure there are other Vampire Diaries podcasts out there that will satisfy you a little bit more than us.
Stop discouraging them. Maybe they should hear this. Maybe they should know. I think they know. I think anyone who's a fan of the show must know, like, why we would critique some parts. There are good things about the show. You know, I have some compliments, for sure.
I can't wait to learn what they are. Uh-huh. I'm going to start off with a little summary off the top of my head. Again, I haven't watched the show, and I'll explain the research that we did for the rest of the show in a moment. I'm going to start off with a summary. The Vampire Diaries was a CW TV show. It aired from 2009 to 2017, loosely based off of a series by L.J. Smith. And that's interesting. I didn't know that. And I've read other books by L.J. Smith, but I haven't read The Vampire Diaries. So that's interesting. It stars Canadian actor Nina Dobrev. And it's basically about a lot of stereotypically attractive CW people, most of them white. It's basically Buffy, if Buffy had been made a decade later on a show, on a network more concerned with young, hot people, and being set on the East Coast instead of the West Coast. That's basically the vibe. It's about an attractive young woman in a love triangle with two vampires. There's a lot of witches. There's werewolves. There's a lot of fighting. Nobody stays dead. And people keep turning into vampires and then unturning into vampires and dying and coming back and going to various versions of the afterlife and hell and heaven. And it's hella messy. And I totally get why people are so invested in it, because mm-hmm. the lore seems to be about a kilometer wide here. Mm-hmm. And I can see how fertile that is of a ground for things like fanfics. So trust me, any of you Vampire Diaries fans out there, I see you. I understand the appeal. And that's why I don't want to be too harsh in my critique, because I totally get how this series could suck you in and make you love it. What else do you need to know? So the main characters are, in no particular order, Elena, who's the attractive protagonist. You've got Stefan and Damon, who are vampire brothers vying for her affection at various points in the series. A bunch of other people who seem fairly interchangeable to me, like Jeremy and Caroline and Tyler. You got Bonnie, who is, I left Bonnie for last because arguably, I think she's the actual hero of the series.
Now that you and I have done our research, which you could tell everybody was what it was, Bonnie is the star. Like, Bonnie should have been the main character from the beginning, in my opinion.
Yeah, but she's black, so that we know that's not going to happen.
Absolutely not. Not on this network, not ever.
That was the thing that I noticed most. Did you notice that most of the people of color, like the two major black people of the show were Bonnie, who, you know, yes, is a protagonist, and then the literal devil.
Yes, I did see that. Okay, tell everybody how we know this, because we only watched the first two episodes of season one.
All right, so thankfully we live in an era where you don't have to watch a whole TV series to learn what happens. You can read Wikipedia or go on YouTube, because there are people who make recap summary videos. And I briefly looked at a bunch of them. Some of them went from 6 minutes to 30 minutes. The one that I watched and I sent to you, Steph, is about 50 minutes. It's from a channel called Recap and Chill. And the full title of the video is The Vampire Diaries Full Series Recap, Season 1 to 8, Ending Explained. So it's 50 minutes of a guy with a somewhat monotonous voice. It's a little bit annoying to listen to for 50 minutes in a row, but he's trying his best. Literally just summarizing the entire series. I really enjoyed the summary. He clearly did a lot of research and prep work for this. And he pulled appropriate clips as he was summarizing. Like, the whole video is just clips of things from the relevant parts of the series.
Yeah, it's like a recap, previously on Vampire Diaries.
It was really well done.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Doesn't go too much into the lore. Like, it mentions things here and there. But I did find myself checking out the fandom wiki a little bit just to kind of supplement what he was saying. Or like, literally, if I like blinked and missed something. Here's what this reminds me of, because when I told you, Steph, that I was watching this recap video, I said, I'm literally going WTF every 30 seconds. This series is bananas. Mm-hmm. And it reminds me of another CW TV series. It reminds me of Riverdale,
mm-hmm.
which I also haven't watched. But 2 years ago, on the annual charity streaming marathon, Desert Bus for Hope, which happens every November, highly recommend people check it out. But two Desert Buses ago, one of the entertainers at Desert Bus found a Twitter thread where somebody had summarized all of Riverdale, all seven seasons, in a Twitter thread, so in like tweet format. And this person on Desert Bus read the entire Twitter thread. It took about 20 minutes. There's a recap video that you can go watch. And the reactions of everybody in the room, both those who had watched Riverdale and those who hadn't, as the recap thread went on into later and later seasons, mirrors the reaction that I had as I watched this recap video for The Vampire Diaries. Because, spoiler for Riverdale, I guess, Riverdale also culminates in them fighting the literal devil. I don't know what was in the water in the 2010s on the CW, Steph. But I'm speechless.
We're going to watch Riverdale next, because it is a fun ride. I want to talk about Riverdale now. Okay, no. We're talking about Vampire Diaries. So I'm going to jump on that, because very similar to Riverdale, because I did watch the first three seasons of Riverdale, just like I watched the first four seasons of Vampire Diaries. Season one in both those shows are pretty tame. To the point where you and I were even saying we watched the first two episodes of Vampire Diaries and we were like, I'm kind of bored. You know, like, this is, I hope it gets better kind of thing. Riverdale started out it's like a 13 episode mini series almost. And it was like a mystery, a murder mystery. And that was fascinating. And I love that. And then it just got campy, right? And that's, it leaned straight into camp, and that's what it went with for the next whatever many seasons. And that's fine. And I think what's fine about Vampire Diaries is that it also just really embraced the genre, right? Like, this is the supernatural genre. It's a fast paced supernatural soap opera. Like, what really more do you want when you watch this show? And I think as time went on, because watching this recap, I was like, 50 minutes this morning, I was watching it and I was like, whoa, because even I didn't remember that all those things happened over the span of even the first four seasons that I watched. But that's because there's 22 episodes per season, but it's bloated. So much happens in every season. Remember in the first two episodes, Kara, Vicky or Victoria, the girl, Tyler's girlfriend, turned into a vampire in that time. And then I think she dies like right away. When, like, in Buffy, that would have been, you know, that could have been elongated for a while longer, you know, like a couple more, like, I don't know, like 5 to 10 episodes. They killed her right away. And I think that pace that they're setting there is what makes the show exciting. And I think that's why watching the recap, it's like overwhelming. You're like, what? But when in 22 episodes of a season, in the end, it's not as overwhelming when you're watching it slowly. So I kind of see the similarity there between that and Riverdale, but I also understand where you're saying, Kara, where you're like, what the fuck is happening? but experiencing four seasons, because I have, it's exciting. It's fun, right? It's like, whoa, what's going to happen next, you know?
Yeah, so I think that's something we can definitely discuss, is kind of how The Vampire Diaries is different from Buffy because it was produced a decade later. And I agree with you. Like, there is something to be said. In that decade, we were still in appointment viewing. Maybe you were watching it time shifted on your DVR, but you were still kind of like beholden to watching it from, you know, a network rather than watching it from a streaming service just on demand anytime you wanted. It was one episode a week. We loved those longer seasons. So, like, it's very similar to Buffy in those ways. But there's a little bit of a difference, obviously, because in 10 years, the culture has shifted. What we want from our TV shows has shifted. Technology has moved on. So we expect, you know, different things in terms of effects and budgets and casts and stuff. I want to seize on something you said when you called it a soap opera, because I totally agree. You know, that's something that I think distinguishes The Vampire Diaries from Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which is, Buffy could be camp at times, but I wouldn't describe Buffy as a soap opera. Buffy is very clearly a drama show, probably mm-hmm. a comedy drama show. Mm-hmm. Whereas I agree with you, Vampire Diaries is intentionally soapy. It's somebody saying, we're going to take this, you know, material and we're going to make a soap opera for, you know, probably a younger audience than most soap operas are targeting at the time. But it strikes me as something very similar to, you know, hospital shows like ER, right? Yeah. Where it's like, or even Grey's Anatomy, right? Where it's like you become invested in these characters and their messy drama because it's so melodramatic. It's so over the top, right? Literally every 5 minutes, this guy is like, and then these two characters spend 5 minutes together and they start to develop romantic feelings for each other.
Yeah, and also like the amount of people that die and then come back to life. Like in this one recap, I was like, Stefan dies again? Jeremy died. When will it be the last time? And then eventually it was. But was it?
Well, okay. This is one of the major things I want to talk about. So we can get into that right now if you want.
Wait, just let me say really quickly, though, that you said, yeah, it's a soap opera. And I said earlier that it's like that's the genre, right? The supernatural soap opera genre. I will give the Vampire Diaries credit for being the best goddamn vampire soap opera out there. Because if that's the goal that they were going after, they accomplished it. They nailed it. You know?
Yeah. I mean, I haven't watched a ton of vampire soap operas. I haven't watched, you know, the originals, which I know is a spinoff of The Vampire Diaries. I'm slowly working my way through True Blood with my best friend. We're currently a few episodes into season two after watching it for like 2 years together.
Ooh, but would True Blood be a soap opera? I guess very.
I don't think True Blood is a soap opera. I agree. I think it's more of a drama, but
It's also campy.
It has elements of melodrama to it.
Yes, I agree with that. Yeah, more than Buffy. Buffy, I think, just in what the recap we just watched, I can compare to Buffy, is that Buffy did take itself seriously, you know? And maybe Vampire Diaries does once in a while, but I think for the most part, they're like, no, we're going for the twist. We're going for the shock, you know?
Buffy had to take itself seriously because at the time, right, there weren't really any other shows on TV like Buffy. And if for whatever reason Joss Whedon had wanted to do a soap opera, a supernatural soap opera, I don't think it would have succeeded the way it did. I think he didn't really have a choice in that matter in terms of, like, it has to appeal to the cultural consciousness at the time. Buffy the Vampire Slayer ran so that the Vampire Diaries could walk.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to go back to what you want to talk about before I was like, no more of this. But one little note about that is a question I might ask ourselves, but also our audience, maybe. Buffy took itself seriously. It was a, you know, critically acclaimed, excellent drama show on a teen network. Did shows after that, though, you know, 10 years later, 15, 20 years later, did they stop taking them so seriously? You know, did they, yes. did they just accept that, like, you yes. know, teens will just watch whatever and soap operas are the way to go? Because when you think about it, like, if you're going to line everything up, yeah, Vampire Diaries and Riverdale have a lot more in common than Buffy the Vampire Slayer did.
And Supernatural, right? Like, I want to go back and watch a recap video from this channel of a series that I've seen, because I'm so curious to see how he would recap, you know, something like, he hasn't done Supernatural as far as I can tell. That would be 2 hours maybe, because I am a diehard Supernatural fan. I love that show. I've seen it multiple times, all 15 seasons, but I'm also going to be first in line to criticize that show. And it's a 15 season soap opera. It's literally about two guys repeatedly dying, trying to save each other and fuck the world. And I love it. I love it to bits, but its quality is around the same level of the Vampire Diaries. I'm biased. I might say Supernatural is a little bit better, at least from what I've seen of the first two episodes of the Vampire Diaries. I think the writing in Supernatural, the dialogue was a little bit better. But that's a fight that, you know, fans of the Vampire Diaries can have with me offline on our, you know, on our Discord or something, prophecygirls.ca/discord. But yeah, I agree with what you're saying, Steph. I think that in the late 2000s, mid 2010s, networks like the CW realized that there was advertiser money, at least. I don't know about fandom money, but there was advertiser money in producing shows that had, you know, very conventionally attractive actors in them that were maybe loosely based on pre-existing IP, like the Vampire Diaries, that you would satisfy that 22 episode season order, like you mentioned, and were basically there to entertain people a week at a time. And to be fair, like, that was also Buffy's MO in many ways. And I don't want to go too far into criticizing a show like The Vampire Diaries and be like, oh, the writers had nothing interesting to say with the show. You know, meanwhile, Buffy's all here, feminism, and talking about the challenges of growing up and stuff, right? Like, I'm sure that's also dealt with on The Vampire Diaries to one extent or another. But at the same time, I agree with you that overall, its shortcomings are not its shortcomings alone. I think that we have to own it as a society. TV was just better in general when Buffy was on. It wasn't always impressive.
You know, like, was, though.
Those shows have not aged well. But in terms of their writing and their construction, I think it was better 20 years ago than it was 10 years ago.
Well, I just think about the other shows that just on the WB alone that aired with Buffy. There was Dawson's Creek, Gilmore Girls, Charmed.
Yeah, like nowadays, I think that, you know, we are now re-entering the era of prestige TV, or at least we were for a few years. I'm not sure if we're still in it at the rate Netflix is canceling series after one season or less. I think Apple TV is still churning out a lot of prestige series. We're in an era of prestige TV, but as we've observed on the podcast before, they're shorter season orders. The episodes are much more serialized, and, you know, Buffy had its hand in that. If Vampire Diaries were to be made today it would be a very different show. Even if it were still soap opera-y, it would be, I think it would be a lot more stylized. I know you haven't watched it yet, but one of these days, I hope we have time to cover it on the podcast. The Netflix TV series First Kill, written by V.E. Schwab, unfortunately canceled after one season. I feel like that's what The Vampire Diaries might have been like if it were produced nowadays. It would be a lot heavier on the music and the way it was shot to convey a highly stylized kind of storytelling. Whereas I think The Vampire Diaries, as it was made in, you know, the 2010s, was a lot more just very straightforward in how it was produced, and a lot more like, yep, okay, these are the characters, this is what they're doing today, here's what's going on, and then here's a sad song at the end of it.
And who, you know what? Good for it. Okay, well, what was it that you wanted to talk about that before? I was like,
I
no,
talk about death. Sorry. Oh. I want to talk about death. Here's what I thought when I was watching that recap, which is perhaps one of the main problems with this series is it has too well explored what happens when death is no longer the end. I understand in supernatural shows that bringing people back from the dead can be a powerful and useful plot twist, plot device. I have nothing wrong. I don't think there's anything wrong with bringing a character back from the dead. You know, we saw that happen in Buffy a couple of times. We've seen that happen in other TV shows. Hell, Sam and Dean Winchester in Supernatural, they died all the time. It became a running joke. But the problem when pretty much every single character dies and then comes back, as I learned happened in The Vampire Diaries, death starts to have no meaning whatsoever.
Well, where are the stakes? Right? Like, yeah. There's no longer high stakes.
And what I noticed about The Vampire Diaries was not only were people dying and then coming back all the time or being brought back, but it seemed like the show just decided that dying is the equivalent of going to a different dimension. And it wasn't even the fact that, oh, there's heaven and hell and maybe purgatory like they had in Supernatural. You know, there was the other side, which turned out to be a creation of an ancient witch. And then there was actual hell, which was a creation of a psychic who then turned into the literal devil. Mm-hmm. And then there was Oblivion, which my understanding actually is a series of pocket dimensions that people get trapped in where they live the same day over and over, because that's where Bonnie ended up for a while with Damon.
Yeah.
So you had a character where you'd like kill them, like Kai, the Siphon Witch, right? You'd kill Kai, or he'd get dragged to hell or whatever, and then he'd come back three seasons later. And I understand how compelling it can be in television, right? Where you've had a character who's been dead for three seasons, and then there's a cliffhanger, and they step out of the shadows, and you're like, oh, snap! Like, oh no, I thought that guy was dead, and now he's back! And it's like, yes, that's great when it happens once or twice in the entire show. But when you kill somebody and you bring them back and you do that like 10 times, the next time you kill somebody, it's just like, okay, he's going to come back. He's going to come back. And then we're going to find out he was adopted and he's actually the long lost love child of this other character who also has amnesia. And he's actually in love with this other character that we haven't heard of before. But trust me, she's going to be important.
Yeah, I completely agree with what you're saying here, because it's so fast-paced, this show, that they have no choice but to continue doing those types of tropes and those types of twists to keep the audience on their toes, because the audience expects to be on their toes. They're like, oh, this show is like, ooh, it's sexy and it's fast and it's fun. And like, I need to be spooked and I need to be surprised at least three times in every episode.
Who's Elena dating this week?
So they have the characters change up their humanity or their morality, or they die and then they come back and then they're different beings and then they possess the other one. And that constant pace is really hard to sustain.
Sure.
And I do think that that's probably one of the reasons why I petered off after the four or five seasons. I was just like, it's the same thing. It starts becoming the same thing over and over again. The stakes are gone. Mm-hmm. the characters are in different relationships all the time, where I want a little bit of stability. A little stability would be nice to calm my racing heart. and eventually you're like, oh, I've learned all the tricks at this point, and no one's really in any mortal danger.
And when characters are constantly pairing up and then breaking things off and then pairing up in different configurations, I mean, again, as an aromantic gal, obviously there's a lot about that I just don't understand. And I fully confess I don't understand the appeal of soap operas in that respect. And I don't want to be harsh towards anybody who does. I'm not saying you're wrong for feeling like those things are entertaining. But for me, it feels like it's a little bit cheaper and it's not as satisfying versus a slow burn romance, or even just a romance where there's that development and that payoff. And sure, maybe they end up breaking up like Anya and Xander, but like that took 3 seasons, right? They started seeing each other in season 4 and broke up in season 6. And here we are in season 7 in the podcast right now, and they still clearly have unresolved issues and feelings. And to me, I really enjoy how, you know, significant of a relationship that was for Xander, right? Same with Willow, where she dated Oz for 2 seasons. And then, yeah, their relationship ended and she ended up with Tara. And then obviously her relationship with Tara is over now. And we're, I guess I can spoil things because we're in a bonus episode, but Willow's going to have another relationship or fling at the end of season 7. And I think that, to me, is a much more compelling emotional drama than, oh, well, now Elena's into Damon because Stefan did his hair differently and she doesn't like that.
It's true. It actually does a disservice to the characters when they're that flimsy. You know what I mean? When things move so quickly, like Caroline is into Stefan and then she's with Tyler and now she's sleeping with Klaus and now she's living with Alaric and their twins and now she's married to Stefan.
The twins that she gave birth to, by the way. And I don't remember if she was still a vampire at that point. That
part is very confusing. Like she is.
Mystical pregnancy. So this is something that show has in common with Joss Whedon. Mystical vampire pregnancy, even. That was really creepy and fucked up to me. It's like, oh, so you gave birth to these twins. They're not yours. You gave birth to them. I don't know how long she carried them. So you decide you're just going to go play house with this guy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Leave all your friends and family behind and play house with this guy who at one point was a teacher at your school?
Well, yeah. So what I'm hearing right now is just that things are so bloated in this show, especially when you recap it in 50 minutes. But like, it's too much, you know, and there's too many supernatural things happening. There's the vampires and the witches and the werewolves and the vampire hunters and Satan and like hybrids and there's a lot going on.
Thank you, because I do have thoughts on this as well, and the construction of the show and its world building, I guess we could say its lore. I want to give it a compliment first, which is I think that the lore of the Vampire Diaries is very compelling. You know, I am a wiki whore. I love falling down a wiki hole. And, you know, I love going on fandom wikis with my ad blocker on because, oh my God, so many ads. And I love reading the wiki for a series I've never watched before because the lore is so deep. And there's a lot of it in the Vampire Diaries. And as I said at the top of the episode, you know, I understand why people fall for this show. I understand how there's a lot of room here for fanfic and exploring other things. I really like that. So I don't want to put the show down too much for the extensive amount of lore. But I do have 2 thoughts on that. The first is, in addition to being a soap opera, I think that The Vampire Diaries has a lot in common with comic book stories, right? Things like the Marvel Cinematic Universe, or more recently on the CW, the Arrowverse world of TV shows. Because, you know, I've watched both Supergirl and The Flash. I don't think I've made any secret of the fact that I fucking love Supergirl. I named myself after Kara Danvers. I'll start a fight here and say, I think it's a better TV show than The Flash. Sorry, not sorry. But, you know, both of those shows, especially The Flash, had elements of melodrama, and they had very similar issues with, you know, characters dying or being banished to all other dimensions and then coming back in a season or two, and then doppelgangers from different universes showing up and people turning evil, turning good, being at odds. it's very similar to The Vampire Diaries. And like you said, Steph, with the amount of lore in that show, because it's based on a comic book, it's, you know, got 60 or 70 odd years of like stories to draw from in terms of its source material, it can get really confusing fast. And I don't think that's a bug. I think it's a feature in terms of, you know, there's a lot of material there for you to draw from. But I hear what you're saying, and I agree with you that it can be very challenging to craft a unified and cohesive narrative out of that story. I think The Flash was marginally more successful than The Vampire Diaries. And I'm aware I'm saying this having only watched one of the two series, because The Flash at least tried its best to carry a through line through the entire series of this protagonist of Barry. Basically, the whole series is him healing from the trauma of his mother dying when he was very young and actually witnessing his mother's death, and then learning how that would affect his trajectory of trying to become a superhero once he got these powers. And from what I gathered from the recap, and we can talk more about this in a bit, I don't feel like the same thing happens with Elena, and there's probably a lot of reasons for that. I will just add, finally, as one last dig at The Flash, that I fucking hate Barry Allen, and I think he's the worst, but that's another podcast entirely that we could do.
Okay, but I do love Grant.
Oh, yes. Gustin. No. Sorry, to be very clear, Grant Gustin is phenomenal, and I love him in other things he's done.
Very talented, yeah. Very talented, yes, boy.
Absolutely. And yeah. I will watch Glee one day, I promise.
Next podcast, we're announcing it now. Glee podcast.
And so this kind of ties into my second point, because when I said, oh, The Vampire Diaries is like comic books, I haven't read the Buffy comic books. I've read like one standalone Buffy comic, but I didn't read like the season 8, 9, and 10 continuation comics. I don't think you have either, right, Steph?
No.
No. And people sometimes ask us, they're like, oh, are you going to recap the comics? And I'm like, no. Hell no.
That's
going to
be a no.
Yeah, they're a little hard to find, and also I don't really enjoy reading comic books and graphic novels.
It's just not my medium. I can't read comic books. It's too hard for me, yeah, for some reason. I'm like, what? Where do I go next?
I like words on a page. Yeah. But also, like, I've read the summaries on Wikipedia and the Buffy Wiki, and that shit is bananas. That's the thing. It's the same feeling I got when I was watching this Vampire Diaries recap. I'm like, wait, what now? You killed all magic, and now Angel is a vampire named Twilight, and it's like Dawn and Xander are together, and it's like, fucking hell, like none of that, please. It's fascinating to me. I think the Buffy TV series was so good at its world building and its lore, because yeah, Buffy also had werewolves and witches and supernatural beings, gods, insane troll logic. Like, it had all of that stuff too. For a while, it was a Monster of the Week episode, but I think that's one of the reasons why it was so successful handling its lore, was because the TV show never forgot what it was about. It never forgot that at its core, maybe the name helps, it's about Buffy. Buffy's a vampire slayer. She kills vampires. And week to week, she might fight a slightly different monster. And the season arc might not be exactly about her killing vampires, but every episode in some way is about Buffy and her struggle to be a hero and to deal with this mantle of being the chosen one, and her arc throughout the whole series. And the show never forgets that. And I'm getting the impression that that's not the case on The Vampire Diaries.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting point that you brought up about Elena versus Barry Allen, and then ultimately versus Buffy, is that I think one of the reasons we can handle the lore in Buffy is, like we said earlier, it's slower paced, right? They give time to these characters to grow, to have relationships that actually impact them, and then evolve from there. So we see evolution of Willow from season one to where we are now. Even Xander to some little degree, but especially Buffy, right? Especially these main characters. Do we get that in The Vampire Diaries? I can't tell because I haven't watched it too closely, but something that, you know, you just brought up that I agree with, Kara, is that characters need to be well fleshed out to hold my attention for 8 seasons. And I think Vampire Diaries must have some element of that for people to stick around and love these characters as much. When you and I watched the two first episodes, a pilot plus season episode two, you and I were like, so what is it about Elena that everybody's obsessed with? Why is she the it girl? It should obviously be Bonnie. And I was really liking Caroline in the first two episodes. We needed
her to walk into a library and have a British librarian say, by the way, you're the doppelganger of Catherine, who's actually like, give me a little bit more heavy-handed exposition and info dump for me in the first episode, please.
Yes. And you and I were just like, okay, so Elena's like, supposed to be sad girl, deep thought journal girl. But she, remember, her parents had died like 3 weeks earlier, and she was just like, Stefan's cute. So whereas remember when Buffy's mom died, and we're still dealing with it 25 years later, we're still like traumatized by it. But what I wanted to say about that is, again, I haven't watched the series, so I don't know. But one thing that I know that we love on Buffy is when these characters take on other characters. Maybe they're under a love spell and Buffy acts a little more wacky than she usually does. Or we see the doppelganger of Willow, you know, Willow the vampire or evil Willow. We see them do different things. Well, Vampire Diaries does that every week, right? Every episode, somebody's changing personalities. We get to see a character in a whole new light. Elena's got Catherine. That's fun.
Amara, is that the other one?
Amara, yes. And then we have Stefan and Damon, who turn off their humanity and are suddenly like soulless, you know, Angelus versus Angel. And I think that's really fun. And if that's what we like in Buffy, you know, you get a whole lot more of that in Vampire Diaries. I also think that it keeps it fresh for the actors who are on these long soap opera shows, right? So it keeps it interesting. So yeah, I don't even know what my point was there. It's more just like you need compelling characters. And if Vampire Diaries, if they don't have as compelling or enriched or evolved characters as Buffy the Vampire Slayer would have, let's say, at least their characters are experiencing, you know what I mean? They are changing, but more like literally from like one body to the next, you know?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, I wish I had been able to get a better sense of Nina Dobrev's acting chops from this. I watched quite recently a newish movie on Netflix called The Outlaws, starring Adam Devine, and Nina Dobrev is in it as the love interest, but she's criminally underused. You've watched four seasons of The Vampire Diaries, Steph, so I'm curious what your thoughts on this. The impression I got from the recap video, and this might just be the way that the presenter, you know, recap things, because a lot of it was a little bit more passive voice. Like I like that he was trying very hard not to analyze the show. He was literally just giving us the facts. But I got the impression that a lot of this TV series is Elena reacting to other people doing shit. Like, how much does Elena do in this show? How much, like, does she choose to do things? Does she choose to become a vampire? Is she the one who's like, no, I'm going to give my blood to, like, it feels like Elena's a little bit of a, like, she doesn't have as much agency, which is a criticism I've leveled at things like Twilight in the past. And I'm curious, am I overreading into that? Like, what do you think?
From what I can remember, I think you're right in that critique. I think that a lot of things happen to her, around her, and she's the moral compass. She's the good girl with the you know, heart of gold, who just is trusting and sometimes naive, but then I think she gets hardened over time.
Does she ever have sex?
She has sex with Stefan. Yep. And then eventually Damon, I'm sure.
Okay, I'm glad. Get it, girl.
Get it.
I was just curious because when you said good girl, I'm like, wait, is this one of those shows where all they do is chastely kiss and they never end up in bed together?
Well, I mean, so she does sleep with Stefan eventually. I don't know when. I can't remember when, but she does. From what I can remember, I don't think there's a big deal after that. I think she just does it, which is nice. Yeah. But, you know, I feel you. However, like I don't feel confident enough to speak on Elena's behalf because I don't really remember. It's not as memorable. That's what I'm saying. Like, her character is not as memorable, where I could tell you every little fucking thing Buffy said and did for the past, you know, 7 years, you know, of her seasons. Elena just doesn't compel me as much. And I didn't watch the four seasons that I did watch. I didn't watch it for Elena. I don't know. I watched it for the shocks and the twists and the ooh. And like, I never invested myself in the love triangle between the two, her and Damon and Stefan. I was a lot more interested in the originals. And I never watched the original spinoff. Like, I never watched it. But I really loved their coming to the show. I thought that they added the little spice that I needed, maybe because they were older and I was older at the time. I don't know. But they added an element to the show that I really enjoyed. And then I think they all left at the end of season four and they took me with them, but I didn't join them wherever they went, to New Orleans or whatever.
New Orleans, I stayed. Yeah.
Yeah.
All I could say about the love triangle is, as with almost every love triangle on TV, the obvious answer, and the CW is just cowards for not doing it, is why not both? Polyamory is a solution to a lot of these problems. And I realize that here I am, an Arrow ace, advocating for something that I understand is extremely complicated and not everybody's up for the calendar skills required to manage a polycule. But even just like a simple throuple where it's like, okay, like, you know, she's dating both of them.
Well, a little spoiler for you, Kara, but as you said that Buffy the Vampire Slayer walked so Vampire Diaries could run. Well, Riverdale.
No. Buffy the Vampire Slayer ran so Vampire Diaries could walk.
Well, Riverdale came on up a couple years later and they just ended their series, I think, last year. And, you know, I'm not going to say much more, but to what you just said, it happens. And everyone at the end of the series is together. And they just can just accept it and we can just all move on.
Well, I'll never forgive Riverdale for its Jughead Arrow Ace erasure, but we'll see. I think I'd rather watch Glee first before I try to dive into Riverdale. I got priorities.
Riverdale is a ride.
This discussion about Elena as, you know, a protagonist without much agency and not the focal point of the show is making me think of something I've brought up before on the podcast. I think I brought this up in relation to how I thought the CW let down Supergirl and canceled it before its time, which is, I think that television as an industry is more misogynistic now than it was 25 years ago in the Buffy era. And that's being reflected in how TV shows are being produced, because Buffy was such a great protagonist. Sarah Michelle Gellar was a great leading actor, despite the fact that obviously Joss Whedon is allegedly a bad guy to work with sometimes. Props to all of the producers and the writers of that show and the people at the network who allowed that show to flourish. And you know, it wasn't always perfect in being progressive and feminist, but it made that attempt. Whereas in kind of the last decade or so, with TV series like The Vampire Diaries or Supernatural or The Flash or Supergirl, I'm not saying that these shows didn't ever have, you know, three-dimensional, fleshed-out, strong female characters. All of them did. But it's interesting to me that it feels like, at least from my anecdotal perspective here, TV series are less willing to put their faith in a strong female protagonist who has agency and who will carry the TV show. So you might have strong female characters on the TV show and showing up from time to time and then getting fridged, like on Supernatural. But, you know, a TV show like Supergirl, where for, you know, at certain points, there were actually like lots of women on the cast. And I'm like, oh my God, this is amazing. And then the network seemed to have less faith in it as a result. And I'm curious about your thoughts on that. I know we're kind of branching off into talking about TV in general, but what do you think, Steph?
I feel like I see a lot of shows nowadays that are starring women and featuring women.
But how long do they last?
Yeah, that I can't answer because I don't watch a lot of new shows. I just see them, advertised. But yeah, I don't know. I don't have an opinion on that, Kara. I'd have to do more research on my own and really, really take a look at what's out there. I know that, like, for a fact that the last couple of years, my favorite shows have starred and been written by women.
Of course.
Fleabag is a really great example of that. But Fleabag was only two seasons, but she meant it to be two seasons. So,
And I want to be careful here, right? I'm not trying to generalize and say that this is true for every single TV show across every single, you know, studio. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there will be exceptions. And it's also possible that this is not a trend. And I'm just, you know, again, extrapolating and seeing something that's not really there. Curious if anybody wants to write in with their thoughts or if anybody knows of any research that's been done on this. I'm just, you know, it's fascinating to me because The Vampire Diaries strikes me as a very good example of a type of TV show that became popular after Buffy in the mid-2010s when it felt like the networks were like, yeah, we want to make shows for the girlies, but we don't trust the girlies to carry these shows on their own. Mm-hmm. And I think that's interesting. And so that I think that brings me into the next thing we should talk about, which is the fact that, you know, Elena starts off the show as the main character and the protagonist. I know that Nina Dobrev exits the show for its final season, but I got the impression from the recap that well before then, she became less of the focal point. It became more of an ensemble cast, which is totally fine.
As it should be.
By the end of the series, Steph, I got the impression that the hero of this series is Bonnie.
And I think we can embrace that. I think we can totally say that's the truth because it's not Elena's Vampire Diaries. The show's not called that. Like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Buffy is she's a slayer. She's the one. But in this one, Vampire Diaries, leaving it open for an ensemble cast to take over. Maybe that was always the direction, right? I don't know. But by the end of the series, it like from what I saw in the recap, I was like, Bonnie's running this show. She's the most powerful person to ever exist. And she's died and come back multiple times. And at the end of the series, she just found a way to make everything a happy ending. So really, she's the benevolent force of good throughout the entire 8-season span, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, props to the producers for recognizing, you know, if it was a case of kind of Kat Graham came on the scene and they realized what a gem she was and how good her character was, and decided that they're going to start shifting the focus of the show to be more on Bonnie and her journey and her actions. But the impression I got from watching this recap was, you know, characters like Stefan and Damon would enter and exit and go away and be evil and turn off their humanity and turn it back on. And like, I understand Bonnie also had her challenges with the magics with a K and stuff. And she kept trying to bring people back and bring her lovers back and all the other witches and the ghosts of witches were just like, girl, stop. Stop resurrecting people. It's bad. Don't do it. Remember the first time you resurrected somebody? That was bad. It killed your mom, right? Like, is that, or her grandma?
Her grandma, like, I think, yeah.
Yeah. And then she keeps doing it. And there was a moment when I was watching this recap where I'm just like, Bonnie and Stefan both make very questionable moral choices at some point. Like, I remember the recap being like, yeah, so Stefan wanted to Stefan wanted to help Jeremy find the cure to vampirism. So to make that tattoo show up faster, he started turning people into vampires so that Jeremy killed them. And I'm like, that's a very creative solution, Stefan. And I have to give you props for it. But it's also bad.
Yeah. Like, and no. I think I missed somewhere in the recap, somewhere in the middle, because like the beginning, and I remember this when I watched the show, that Bonnie and Jeremy were in love. And then but I missed something in the middle. And then at the end, it's like, Bonnie ends the show. She's going to go travel. And her love, Enzo's ghost, will always love her. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
When did this happen? Can we also, as we're talking about characters, though, I want somebody who's an actual fan of the show who has watched the entire thing and loves it. Tell me, though, does Bonnie change and evolve outside of her powers? Like her personality, her experience, her agency, does she change at all from episode one to the very last episode? Because from what I saw in the recap, and that's not being fair because I've not watched the show in depthly. From what I saw in the recap, looks like Bonnie at the end of the show is the same. Like, she's always had a good head on her shoulders. She's always been a good person. Maybe she's been tested a little bit, but like, it looks like, the, you know, all's good. And nothing has really impacted her personality-wise or whatever. And I'm just curious. Like, I'm not saying that that's not true. I'm just, I don't know. It didn't seem like that to me. Something else that was shocking to me, Kara, as I watched the recap, is that at the end, they're like, Matt becomes mayor. And I was like, Matt's still here? Like once in a while, they would bring up like something that's going on with Matt in the show. And I was like, I cannot believe that Matt is still around. He's the Xander, the normal guy.
Barely knew who Matt was. I'm just like, I don't know who this guy
is. Oh, Matt, we barely knew ye. He was, because remember when we were watching the pilot and he was like the quarterback that was like jealous of Stefan and Elena getting together. And
the boyfriend where he, you know, he's like trying to get her attention and she's like, my parents just died. I don't want to talk to you. And he's like, but it's been 2 weeks, babe.
Yeah. And then, but then Elena was like, I don't want to talk to you. I want to talk to Stefan because he understands me better than you. I can't remember because it's been a couple months now, but you and I had something nice to say about him while we were watching the first two episodes. I can't remember what, sorry, Matt, I don't remember what it was, but, yeah, I was legitimately shocked when they gave updates about him once in a while. And I get it. They need somebody like that normal person. Because like we said, this thing is bloated with supernatural lore. Everybody turns into many things all at once, right? They're vampires. They've got humanity. They don't. They're werewolves. They're vampires, slayers. There's a bunch of stuff going on. I guess Matt is there through it all. And nothing changes for him other than that he lives a normal life as best he can amongst all the supernatural drama that's happening around him. I was just shocked to see it at the end. I was like, oh my God, he becomes mayor. What are the odds? Yeah.
No, I don't know. I want to say Bonnie grows as a character just from what I saw in the recap because, you know, I think she goes on a bit of a hero's journey. You know, it sounds like she's the support character and then she eventually graduates to destroying hell and killing the literal devil and Catherine, right? And I'm just like, you go, like,
no, awesome, amazing.
Bonnie levels up.
yeah, good for Bonnie. I'm curious. Think about Willow, right? Because at the, you know, we are allowed to do spoilers here because it's a bonus episode. But at the end of the series, Willow becomes a goddess, which you and I will be talking about when we get there. But we literally know that Willow has been to hell and back. We know it in her personality. We know it in how she changes from Mousy Willow season one to a goddess at the end of the series. We've watched that journey for her. We believe it. So I'm curious if it's the same thing with Bonnie or, you know, has she always kind of just been the same?
Right. No, I see what you're saying. I just... I saw a little bit more growth in the recap than you did, but I can't answer it more fully. So yeah, anybody who's familiar with the show could write in and talk about that.
We really liked Bonnie in the pilot. I remember we had jokes about them being in a car or something. We had good that we should have recorded this sooner because when things were fresh.
We used to be so much more entertaining, listeners. We apologize.
We used to do better at this. But I also remember in the pilot or the second episode, I don't know which one it was, they were at a party and it was like the most beautiful bush party with like these like epic gazebos and beautiful well-lit bridges.
You and I have been growing up in Thunder Bay and I never went to a Thunder Bay party, but I have heard enough about them. Thunder Bay bush parties are not like this.
Oh, it's pitch dark and fucking hills. Like you know, wilderness.
This was a party that was very obviously on a sound stage.
Yeah. And I can't remember. I think at one point, because she's writing in her journal in the cemetery, as one does, right? When your parents just die in a terrible car crash. And I remember you be like, what is she always writing about? And I was like, Kara, it's like, she's writing about vampires. It's her vampire diary. And I remember, I wish I remember our jokes. I really do. Yeah. I don't know. Like anything else to bring up about the series. I mean, specifically about the first two episodes of what I'm trying to bring it back to, but I don't remember them well enough anymore. I just remember the recap that I watched this morning.
Well, just the whole idea of Mystic Falls and being set in Virginia and like the centuries of the town, you know, its origins. It's another example of an American supernatural horror show really failing to engage with the colonialist origins of its story, right? Like they're like, yeah, we're in Virginia, this is one of the oldest settlements in America, and it's like, settlements on whose land, right? Who was here first, TV show? And Buffy also fails quite obviously in that regard. Pangs, I'm looking at you. Spanish missions, I'm looking at you. You know, I don't know how much the Vampire Diaries ever gets into talking about indigenous peoples or how they're connected into these mythologies, you know, at any point. But it's interesting to me how a show that's set on the East Coast in one of the older states of the US versus a show that's set in the West Coast like Buffy, there is a different vibe there. You know, it reminded me a lot of the Gilmore Girls, where it was like, you know, Stars Hollow, very like New England, Connecticut, like pride in its connections to the founding of America. And I got the same kind of vibe from the Vampire Diaries, even from the first couple of episodes. I'm just like, oh, this is like a Star Spangled Banner kind of thing. And speaking as a Canadian and somebody who's, you know, doing my best as a white person and a settler to like learn about colonialism and try to be decolonial, it's like, oh, like there's a whole subtext here that these kinds of shows never fully want to acknowledge or grapple with.
And they never will, Kara.
Well, I want them to do better.
They won't. So stop asking them. They just want to show us hot people getting with other hot people, and we just need to accept that, okay? We need to accept it.
So I have a few more questions for you, Steph. These are just kind of like, this is our lightning bonus round. Obviously, I'm not expecting you to remember an answer to all of these, but I think you can answer most of them. Number one, were there more or less Asian vampires in the Vampire Diaries than in Buffy? Do you remember?
I think there were way less. In that entire recap that I watched, it looks like Stefan settled down with some form of Asian woman in the later seasons in Savannah until he's brought back to the fold. That's the only Asian I saw. So
the Asian rep was even worse than in Buffy. Okay, good stuff.
Also, there aren't really any background vampires to dust in Vampire Diaries. Every vampire has a purpose there. Every vampire has a storyline.
Most of the vampires seem to want to kill all other vampires, which I thought was a very interesting development.
Yeah, so as far as Asian vampires go, looks like Mystic Falls is really lacking.
Good to know. I will throw out here, I thought the origin story for vampirism in the Vampire Diaries was very compelling. Like you said, I think the originals were really cool characters. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
I would learn more about that if I didn't have to watch the whole show.
Yeah, I might watch the originals now because I remember specifically liking.
Can you reboot the Vampire Diaries? It's been 10 years, right? It's time.
Also, I'll add that, like, you know, as far as problematic characters go on the show and like problematic male leads that you want to love, I never liked Damon. He's not it for me.
That was my next question, was Stefan or Damon? And who is hotter?
Who's hotter? To me, Stefan's hotter, and I've always been a Stefan girl if I were to choose. Like I said, I didn't invest in the triangle very much, but if I did, I'd choose Stefan. But it's interesting because I have this weird fascination with Klaus. So if I'm going to choose a problematic baddie, I would probably go with the original Klaus.
So Klaus is your kind of favorite like male character in terms of his cool factor, shall we say?
I just liked the actor. I just thought he was really good.
In terms of like attractiveness, who's the hottest?
Out of all the men on the show, I think Klaus I'm the most attracted to.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm just curious. Like, you know, we've talked about Angel versus Spike and, you know, who's attractive on Buffy. So I'm just like, okay, I want to know, like, Stefan, Damon, Klaus. You know, I love you coming in with that third party answer. This is great. So what I hear is Klaus and Elena should have ended up together.
Cool. No, fine. I didn't. I liked him. I liked him aloof. Elena doesn't. She's so blah to me. I think he had a thing for Caroline, which I found compelling.
So
it never went anywhere, though. So
would you say Klaus was also like the best big bad, or was there another baddie that you thought was more compelling as a villain?
I did think he was the best big bad because he was the reason I was enjoying the show for a while there, and then he left. Well, he was like a problematic big bad because he was actually like he played both sides, as all these characters did, right? He was moral sometimes, most of the time not. So when he left the show, I kind of was like, nah, no more.
He struck me as very similar to Adam from Buffy, right? Because he wanted to build his little hybrid vampire werewolf army.
Yeah.
And I thought that the whole machination of him maneuvering Elena into having to give him her doppelganger blood to start making his army, I thought that was very fascinating. And
yeah,
so I understand where you're coming from. I respect Klaus's game.
I do too. And I think the fact that he was an original, like the idea of like the original vampires is just really fascinating to me. As you and I would always say when we're watching, you know, Buffy, we're like, we love a vampire backstory. Well, here is like the ultimate vampire backstory story, which is the original.
We love it when vampires embrace their campiness and are over the top, right? Like the Master or, you know, Drusilla, right? Dracula on Buffy.
Just like Buffy in season 7 was like, what if we had a hot principal for once? Vampire Diaries was like, what if we had a hot master, right? Like, what if the master were young and hot and had siblings?
And actually competent. Yeah. No, I agree. And that was my issue with both Stefan and Damon was, you know, and I have the same issue with Edward Cullen, which is they're trying too hard to just be generic hot white guys, right? Like, they're just like, yeah, I'm a boy just like you. I just happen to be a vampire. And it's like, no, like you're centuries old. Embrace it and get fucking weird, okay? Like,
well, also, something I think I took away from my enjoyment of the show as well is that Damon and Stefan are clearly not brothers. They're like of different, like completely different areas of the world, it looks like. Whereas if you replaced Damon with Klaus, like the actors, if you replaced the two, that's actually a way more compelling situation.
Weren't
for me.
Stefan and Klaus related in some way in the show?
I think Klaus was the original sire of Stefan's line of vampires, is from what I remember from the recap. Okay.
Yeah, I just remember there was this whole thing with Stefan falling in love with Klaus's sister, Rebecca, but then Klaus is like, I don't like that, so I'm going to make you forget and then stab my sister and put her in suspended animation for like 6 years.
Classic Klaus. We're going to watch the originals next. You know what? Forget anything else. We're watching the originals.
Okay. Final question for you, Steph. You only watched the first 4 seasons of The Vampire Diaries, right? Mm-hmm. What would you say, aside from Klaus, what would you say was like a moment from that series that really stood out for you from any character, any other story arc? What was something that really stood out for you that you're like, oh, like, that is fascinating. That's a cool part of this show.
I really enjoyed Caroline's transformation from teen girl to vampire. We'd seen characters change to vampires on this show already. Like Vicky, I think her name was, in the first 3 episodes of season 1. We've seen it before, but to have a main character change like that was always compelling to me, because watching her struggle, because she was like, you know, Susie cheerleader. She was like the girl, the it girl of the high school, always wanted to be involved in everything. So to see how becoming a person who's like undead and how that changes all the things that she expected of her life. Like, I think she really wanted to go away for university. She had like plans for her future, and to see that all change was, I always liked watching. And I always found Caroline more interesting than Elena in that way, because Elena was always caught up in her brother's love life for some reason, but mostly her own love life, where Caroline, I think, had more agency from the very beginning. So, and then her, when she becomes a vampire, her mother kind of disowns her. And then she has this whole relationship with her mom going through the rest of the series. I really liked Caroline's storyline.
I remember really liking Caroline in the 2 episodes that we watched. Mm-hmm. I thought she was an interesting character and I wanted to see more. I think, was it Jeremy who had a thing for Caroline? Because Bonnie had a thing for Jeremy. Did Jeremy have a thing for Caroline?
Or Tyler? No. Tyler and Caroline get together eventually. I don't think anyone's into Caroline at the beginning.
Maybe that was why I liked her, because she seemed like she was into other people and nobody was into her, and I felt sad for her. But
I see she was supposed to be like she's supposed to be like the Cordelia character at the beginning.
Yeah,
a little bit like a frenemy with Elena in some ways. Mm-hmm. But like at the end of the day, I remember as I watched the series, just being like, no, Caroline's it. Like, I think
that's how we felt about Cordelia, right?
And I think it's also like I was saying earlier. Do these characters grow? Like, does Elena grow like throughout the series? Caroline, I think I saw the most growth from in the first couple seasons, and that's maybe why I connected to her so much.
And that's a really good point, Steph, which is I think going back to what we said earlier about just the constant changes, the soap opera levels of just reversals and plot twists in this show, an issue with that genre and with the way that shows like this are constructed is often they mistake changes in status for character growth and development, right? The mm-hmm. fact that Elena is human and then becomes a vampire and then becomes human again, that's not growth. That's just a change. And growth has to be her learning something from those changes and becoming a different person and acting differently and having different motivations. And again, we're not the best suited to talk about that and critique that aspect of her as a character, but the impression I got from the recap was it was more like, yeah, she's human now. What more do you want?
Well, also like her struggle, I think in what, season 4 or 5, she becomes a vampire. And it sounded like her struggle was to like control her vampire tendencies when she wants to be a vegetarian vampire, whatever. I was like, but Caroline already went through that. We already saw that.
Did she get a glow up like Bella? Do vampires in the Vampire Diaries get glow ups?
No, because they're already inhumanly beautiful as humans. So, and like they can go in the sun. What changes other than that you're immortal now when you're a vampire? You know,
well, nothing. That was my thing. It's like, why do you want to cure so bad? It seems like being a vampire in this world is fine, is unless awesome. Somebody happens to kill the original that sired your bloodline. Like, you're good.
You could also still go to your local college, and it's no big deal. You know, so it's fine. Yeah, I would want to watch the whole series to really come down, like you're saying, to really critique and understand Elena's character. Like, just in the recap, I just saw more growth out of Caroline than any of the other women on the show. And that's, think about it, like she started off as this bossy, kind of self-involved schoolgirl like Cordelia. Then she becomes a vampire. She falls in love. I'm sure she's evolved. She's involved in all the other stuff that's going on. But by the end of the series, she's like a mother of twins. And she, you know, like she loses her husband. Like, I just think there's like, there's something there that I can hold on to as, you know, a woman in her mid 30s watching a character grow.
Yeah, that's totally fair. Any final thoughts on The Vampire Diaries?
I don't think we were as mean as we thought we would be. I don't begrudge anyone who likes this show. I watched it too. I just trailed off because it wasn't for me near like middle end. But I get it. It's fast paced. It's fun. It's sexy. It keeps you on your toes. And sometimes that's what you want in your television show, you know?
It's a very CW TV show. And I mean that in the nicest possible way. RIP the CW.
Exactly. And I am curious about the fandom of Vampire Diaries, if the age gap conversation is as heavily brought up with these characters as it is with Buffy. I just had to stick it in there. It is like, I just cannot.
Some of these characters are like 1,000 years old, right?
Yes. And honestly, Klaus, like he's an original. He's like the oldest one. And that's why I like him. I like that he's that old. Sorry.
You just like the older man, eh?
I just do, especially if I'm, you know 16, 17.
You know what I thought the show was missing? Was they were missing a Giles. They were missing an older.
That's what Alaric is supposed to be.
Supernatural daddy baddy.
That's what Alaric is supposed to be.
He's not old enough.
He's old to the CW. They're like 26. And wait, what happened to Elena's aunt? Did she die? Is it her aunt?
The recap ever mentions this.
What happened to her? Oh, well. Okay. We liked her in the pilot. We were like, what a go-getting young auntie,
she's
you know?
Like
a 22-year-old. Yeah, she's like a 22-year-old trying to take care of her 16 and 15-year-old niece. She looked young. She looked...
Oh,
no, CW. She was... It's the CW old, so she must have been 25.
Oh, gosh. Okay. Well, then, if you liked this bonus episode and you'd like to support the show, there are many ways to do that, including going and buying merch in our merch store that has nothing to do with the Vampire Diaries, but there is some vampire iconography. You can get logo t-shirts and mugs and Xander Slander, prophecygirls.ca/store.
Nice.
Thank you also to everybody who supports us on Buy Me a Coffee, especially our chosen ones, Emma, Kyle, Destiny, Erica, Allison, Jace, Haley, Tasha, Ricky, Amy, Rochelle, Laura, and Bahia.
Holly, Kayla, Jordan, Julian, Nicola, Luis, Joshua, Reese, Susanna, Jasmine, Christy, Kimmy, and Lauren. All right, happy bonus day, everybody. We'll see you for our regular scheduled episode soon. Bye. Thanks for listening to Prophecy Girls. If you want and can afford to donate, head on over to buymeacoffee.com/prophecygirls for one-time and monthly options.
You can also visit prophecygirls.ca/store to view all of our merch and rep the podcast on a sweatshirt, mug, sticker, or more.
We appreciate all of your support, even if it's just spreading the word about us or enjoying our show week by week.
We also invite you to join in the discussion by messaging us on our social media channels.
Follow us at Prophecy Girls Podcast on TikTok, Instagram, and Facebook, and Prophecy_Girls on Twitter.
You can also email us at prophecygirlspodcast@gmail.com or visit our website, prophecygirls.ca, where you can find the link to our Discord.
Praise Moloch.
See you next week.